Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Releasing Your Inner Dragon with Drake and Marie. I am Maxwell Alexander Drake, one of your hosts here. I am an award-winning novelist. I teach writing all over the world. I just got back from a three-week tour around the country doing conventions. With me, as always, is my co-host, Marie.
Hi, my name is Marie Mullaney. I am a fantasy author and a YouTuber with a world-building channel, and I have not just but recently gotten back from the United States, where I went to Comic-Con with Drake.
And it was loads of fun. I was a horrible host because I was way behind because I put too much on my shoulders, and I basically stuck her in a small room with no windows while she was here and didn't let her go see any of Las Vegas. But yeah, it was terrible.
I did get to go to a baseball game, and I did get to see Red Canyon Rock, which was amazing.
I mean, I tried a little bit, but yeah, it was bad. I was a terrible host. That's okay. When I go to visit her, she's just going to stick me in the dog sled kennel, and it'll be just. So today we're going to bring you a special episode. It's going to be almost like a cage match. Not really. So we're going to talk about some very esoteric stuff, some very subjective stuff, that there is no right or wrong answer. And we're both on opposite sides of this. So we're going to be arguing hot and heavy for our side. But we both know that neither one of us can be right and neither one of us can be wrong. So it's not, don't. You know, this isn't mommy and daddy arguing and fighting with each other, you know, so don't take it that way. We thrive on this stuff. We have fun with it. So I just kind of want to say that up front, that this may sound like we're all like, ah, but I promise you, this is literally some stuff. Matter of fact, this is how awesome it is. We were going to do something else. We started talking about this stuff completely offline before we started. And halfway through, we were like, we need to record this. Like, this is some really good stuff because it is some pretty high level, I would say 301 level stuff. It started with one of my beta readers. So although she wasn't a beta reader at the time, but because of all this conversation, I was like, hey, I really want to make you a beta reader. But she was asking me some questions. She was going through the Genesis Saga, which is coming out. I do have an official release now for the first book of Genesis Saga. It'll be out in November, the director's cut, the completely rewritten version of that award-winning novel. And basically, there's an event that happens in chapter one where we have to be careful on YouTube. But basically, somebody magically essays, I think is the word that we're supposed to use on YouTube. They mentally essay the main character. And it's brutal. And the character hates it. And the character is a slave. And has been a slave their whole life and is used in just fighting for entertainment, and nobody cares about him. And he didn't even have a name. Literally, he's just called the Beast. He doesn't know his own name. No one knows his name. You know, this is literally property as low as it can get. And the only thing, you know, he's very intelligent, and you learn that as you travel with him. But the only thing he has is his mind. That's the only thing that was never taken from him. And so this is in the opening scene, he gets that taken from him. And so it does affect him negatively. He does hate what happens to him. But she was like, look, the narration doesn't ever talk about it. Doesn't ever talk about the fact that he was essayed. Mm. You know, he's just like, oh, you know, I thought I had this, but I don't. Mm. And, you know, it's like, she was like, he literally was essayed. I mean, he should, you know, be this way. And so I got into this discussion with her about how I write true third person limited. And this is where it's going to get esoterical, because there is no real defined definition of this stuff. So my view on what I do versus Marie's view on what I do are different, and that's fine. And so then she even pulled up the latest story that I had published, and we're going to kind of go through some aspects of it. And she's going to rip me apart, and I'm going to show her why she's wrong for ripping me apart. And we're both, you know, it's fine. We're having a good time with this because we both grow and learn. And actually, several things she said has, at least on my side, has adjusted my way of thinking. I don't know if I've succeeded on the other side. But anyway, so I said, look, the way I write is, even though I'm writing in third person past tense, since I write in True Limited, the character only knows at that sentence that you're reading. Whatever sentence you're reading, that's all the character knows up to. And so the Beast doesn't understand that he was violated in this horribly personal and you know, very private way, because that's all he's ever known. That is his life. Like, it's nothing that's special. He has nothing special. He thought he had his mind. He doesn't have his mind. Well, I was wrong again. You know, it's not, he doesn't see it that way. And so therefore the narration, even though it's in prose, so it is narration, it is still his narration. And so I can't put that in the narration. I have to let the reader understand that, and then also look for other ways. So the person who does it, just to kind of give you the full story, and then I'll turn it over to Marie. She didn't realize that she was going to do this. She was actually testing something out that she had a theory on. And there's this moment in there, and it's kind of a throwaway line. And I do that a lot, where I'll do this really innocuous line that you're like, you might miss. But there's a line in there where the Beast is like, I think I feel like, is that remorse? I'm not feeling remorse. What the crap is this? And what it actually was since they were connected, she was feeling remorse, and it came through. Now, he doesn't understand it, so therefore I cannot put it in the narration. He just felt remorse, and he's like, remorse? I don't regret anything. What? Screw this. Like, so it's in there if you're paying attention. And then in the next scene that they're together, she's the one who says, look, I essayed you, and I feel horrible about it, and I will do anything to make it up to you. And even in that chapter, he's like, yeah, I don't understand. And so the narration never picks up on it there either, even though she's literally saying the words. It still doesn't impact him at the level that maybe a reader would be like, no, you should be really upset about this. He doesn't see it that way, so therefore I can't cheat. And because then that becomes omniscient. And then that led Marie down other paths, which we will now go into and see if we can make Drake eat his words.
Okay. So that led me to say that sometimes you do pull the camera back. And specifically on the plane over to America, I had read Son of the Empire, Plane Rides Along, and, you know.
Especially from the other side of the world.
Books are handy. So I read Son of the Empire while on the plane. So it was very fresh in my mind. And there is a paragraph at the beginning of Son of the Empire where I felt like Drake had drawn back out of the character and provided an info dump of the world. Now, and to me, when you info dump, you almost always draw out of the character because it's not how the character would think. It's like, as you know, Bob dialogue, but there's no dialogue. You know, it's just the monologue. Yeah. So so I will just read the two paragraphs in question. So the only truth about the gigantic wall of fog that was known for certain was it had been here since before the awakening. That and all knew the dangers that lurked within the tangled mistwood forest hidden beneath the semi-transparent cloud. Now, all of that, I will give you, can be how Latimus is thinking, because he's just seen the heavy fog. The mist is right there. He's aware of it. But then the next paragraph says, beyond the great mist lay the northern plains, lands that extended all the way to the frozen wastelands. Small farming villages for the most part, but some decent-sized towns could also be found scattered about. Much of the food eaten within the realm came from there, though the endless forests of the north were the real treasure, providing most of the wood used throughout the empire. And what I said was, this feels like an info dump. It has nothing to do with what is going on currently. It has nothing to do with the situation he's looking at. It's literally just like, this is what is beyond the wall. It is not even information the reader needs right now. It's not relevant to this plot. So it just felt like an egregious slightly, not omniscient, but free and indirect, kind of like a kind of drawing back out of the character paragraph.
So, and she's 100% right on all of that. Everything she said is 100% right on. I'm going to vehemently disagree with her on it because I have my reasons, but she's not wrong. It 100% is. We're going to talk about, like, there's another spot we're going to talk about where she's like, wait a minute, isn't this filtering? And I'm like, yes, it is. And so we'll talk about that next. But I do want to talk about, because, so here's the thing. You still have to tell a story. Even though I still consider this in True Limited, and I'll get into my reason in a second, but this is the very first story of 4.4 million words. This is the first chapter of 4.4 million words in a brand new world. And so even though this 66-word paragraph is not relevant to the story, you have to look for ways to sprinkle in, and this is my opinion, these are all just opinions, you have to look for ways to sprinkle in bigger things. And so one of the reasons why this is here for me is that we're on a farm. You know, this is on the beginning of second page. All you've seen is a farm and a giant wall of fog that's hundreds of feet high that stretched from horizon to horizon. That's it. That is literally all you have seen with this. So one of the things that this paragraph does for me is that it actually goes, this is actually a really big world, people. We're going to get to it eventually. And then the next paragraph, we're right back on the farm, right in the moment, right in everything. So that's one of the things that I'm doing, is that I'm just kind of saying, hey, yeah, it's a big world. We'll get there. But here's the reason why I feel it's still in both of these paragraphs. As I said earlier, when I'm writing my third person limited, it's the characters, the narrator, the character telling the story, and the character only knows up to whatever sentence you're reading. Whatever sentence you're reading is where the now of the story is happening. So, you know, no one reads me and goes, oh yeah, this happened in the past. They feel like it's happening to them as they're reading it. Yeah. And how I maintain that is the character doesn't know anything beyond that. There's no omniscient to it. And so she's 100% right on the first paragraph. The first paragraph is actually much more subtle in the, yeah, that can definitely, because he's thinking about what other people think about, and that, you know, he doesn't have any idea what the actual truth is. All he knows is that what's behind that wall will kill you. That's it. That's what he knows. And then I go to the second paragraph. So again, on one hand, I want to, close to the beginning of the story, just let the reader know that this is a big world, because we're never going to see this big world in this story. We're going to go inside that mist. You're going to be able to see for about 20 feet in any direction for the entire story. And that's it. You're going to be in this small little tiny bubble that moves around with them. And so you're not going to really experience any of this world. So this is about my only opportunity to do something like this. And while it 100% is an info dump, 100% you could say it's omniscient, whatever. And this also might be me being too clever for my own good, because no one's going to get this. And I told her that this is for, you know, this is really how I justify putting this in here, but no one is going to do it. And this is going to be a spoiler. So if you want to skip the next 60 seconds, skip the next 60 seconds. So when you're introduced to Latimus, you're introduced, he's a ranger in training. He is holding some horses and he's not even involved in on the discussion that's happening. He's not even close enough to even hear it. He's watching a discussion and holding horses. So he is low man on the totem pole. Why would he be thinking about where the food comes from for this kingdom? Why would he be thinking about the most valuable thing is the wood that comes from the northern forest? Again, no one's going to get this. Because at the very end, in the very last chapter of this, you find out that he's actually the emperor's son. He is actually not just a nobleman, because you figure that out early. He is the nobleman. Like, he's the top of the top. And so the reason why I feel that this narration is still in Latimus's perspective, even though you're not going to get it, even though where you're at right now, you're going to absolutely see it as just an info dump, I justify it to myself because I'm kind of putting a breadcrumb, even though I know no one's going to pick it up, that Latimus thinks management. He thinks big scale when he thinks about the world, because he was raised that way. And so, yes,
no one's going to get it.
Yes.
If no one gets it, it's just an info dump. But it's justified to me because of the fact that that is how Latimus thinks. Because that's what a lot of people like. That was one thing you said earlier is, he doesn't think that way. Actually, he does. Like, I would never do this with a different character.
So I'm going to push back on that. Because
I hope you do.
Because if you wanted to show that this is how Latimus sees the world, then you needed to pull that back to the relevance that Latimus feels to the story. Because currently, there is no link. And this, to me, is one of the things that I say often to people that I critique, is this information that you have just provided here, do I need it now? Is it in any way relevant to what's going on here? Because without that link, now, if it grows my understanding of the character, that's great, but then it needs to actually grow my understanding. It can't be a breadcrumb no one's ever going to get, because then it is just the info dump, right? So if I think of when I did the same kind of thing in Hidden Blade, like right at the beginning, there are other duchies. I never mention them until they come up in narration, right? But when Etendulot comes up, I have Louis think about it like a nobleman, because he is, right? But he is thinking of something that is plot relevant and bringing it back to what's going on in the story. So with this particular paragraph, right? So it is the breadbasket of the empire that is beyond this great mist. You know, if Latimus then went, if the mist expanded, as these people said, or if this happened, you know, or if the mist was spitting out monsters or whatever, like whatever ties back into the story, that could be a disaster for the empire. That then emphasizes not just that this exists, because right now it just says this exists. It doesn't say why it matters to Latimus. And once you make that link of why does this piece of information matter to Latimus in this moment, then you're actually showing that he thinks like a manager. Because you're not just thinking of the information, you're thinking of why it matters and why what we're doing here mitigates the potential disaster there.
Yes, 100% agree with that. And this is why being critiqued is so important, being open to critique is so important. Because just because you can justify something to yourself and say, no, this is what it is. Because here's the thing. Here's where my mind went as far as why I left it at this. A lot of people would go and then do something like what I thought Marie was leading toward in the beginning, which was then Latimus thinking something about... oh, this would disrupt food for the empire and that would be disastrous. To me, I don't want to do something like that because I am hiding the fact that who he is. And again, I won't say it again since I already said it in this area that I told you to skip if you don't want a spoiler. And since that becomes very heavy-handed now, again, being open to critique and listening and actually chasing these rabbits with a completely open mindset and not a, no, my way is right because I'm right because I'm always right. You just hit on something that we didn't hit on in the beginning of this. Because when we walked away from the beginning of this, I hadn't changed my mind because everything that you had given me still made me go, no, that's too heavy-handed. No, I don't want to do that. Not that it's wrong. It's that I don't want to do it. But you literally just said, and you didn't say it explicitly this way, but you did throw it in there. Because this is a monster hunt. You know, when I was pitching this over this last 2 weeks, I was like, look, basically the story is Latimus's reigner in training, his bosses, his mentors get sent up to, because there's some farmers missing. Don't look for a Shakespearean mystery because this isn't a whodunit. This is a what done it and how do we kill it? Because the world has monsters. And so right there, that's a brilliant thing that would organically bring it back in without being heavy handed and without giving anything away for Latimus. We know we're there. We've already stated that farmers are missing. And so bringing this back into, which is why the rangers spend so much time protecting the farmers up here, because, you know, the great mist spits out dangerous creatures. So
while you were talking, I added a note because even though this was published, I've already told everybody that it isn't official until the end of 2024. So I will be changing a few things in this story before it's, you know, even though it's published now and you can get it on Kindle and Amazon and Starving Writer Studio, which I'd rather you do and don't give Jeff Bezos another one of my dollars. That is still brilliant. Like, that's a good way to bring it in and not, because my concern, so what am I trying to do is this, as the storyteller, I don't want to give away who Latimus is. I want to present him as a ranger in training. I want to drop some breadcrumbs. So like, you do learn that he's probably a nobleman. It's never explicitly stated, but like later on his mentors are like, you will not, you know, you're going to do what we tell you. And he thinks to himself, well, I could make you do what I want, but then I'd just be a spoiled little brat. And then that also grows Latimus's character because you're like, oh, so he does have power over them and he refuses to use it because he has values and he values them and he honors what his role is in this relationship. And so that grows him, especially when you learn that he's not just an old woman, that he, you know, again, spoilers, sorry. So that's why having these open and honest discussions and not just digging yourself in and going, oh, no, my way. What you're looking for is a way that does still work your way, but also can fix what the person's problem is. And that only happens through open and honest and completely, you know, egoless discussion. That's why I said we get into these battles, but we know that neither one of us are actually like digging your heels in.
Yeah. So I do want to say, like, also there is an incumbency on the critiquer to be a little bit like, don't trample everywhere. So I learned a lot from a couple of these critiques that I got, but man, that took me a while to process and respond rationally to, because I had some critiquers who would, and that's where I learned, bring every paragraph of world building back to why it matters to the character. In some way, you've got to tie that back. Because I had two critiquers who would, every time they felt that it was an info dump that was not connected to the character, they would write one word beneath the paragraph, and that word would be bored. Now, you want to feel horrified. You open up a critique and there's like five just bored in there, and you're like,
because here's the problem with that critique. It doesn't give you anything to go. There's nowhere you go with that. You're like, well, it doesn't bore me. Like, it doesn't bore my other readers. So what can I do with that? Whereas
I did ask them. So I did ask them what they meant by that. And they explained that it's when they feel emotionally adrift from the character. And I was like, okay, so that's what that word means when you write it. I'm going to take it in that context and not take it as like,
But you can come with me with that. Well, I mean, first of all, it's 66 words. If you're reading and you hit a 66 word paragraph and it bores you so much that you put the book down, but everything else is exciting, then you're a really weird reader that you can't skip 66 words. But that's like, that's not the way you approach me either. And that's not a way, I mean, everything you said was fantastic. When you're the critiquer, you need to come with really how it, you know, some concrete, not necessarily solutions, because hopefully the writer will get there. And again, you threw out the word monster, but that wasn't your focus on the monster. Your focus was on another area. And it's like, but that's a little heavy handed, but the monster. Now that does tie directly back into the story and a ranger in training, because I'm walking a weird line here. Yeah. I'm playing a character who is this one thing, who is playing a character of a ranger in training. But you don't know that he's this character. You only know at this point that he's the ranger in training. So I have to run the role like a ranger in training.
So as the critiquer, it is incumbent upon you to approach it with enough information that the person being critiqued can do something about the problem. You know, like, I'm not saying you have to sugarcoat it or whatever, but they have to be able to solve the problem if they see the problem, right? That to me,
and a lot of times you don't know how to articulate it. So, you know, as we already said, we've already had this discussion.
Yeah,
we had this discussion, and we actually moved on to the next part of the discussion, and we resolved nothing initially, and yet in this one we resolved it. Why? Because Marie changed how she was trying to explain herself, and she went down the path a different way, which was the connecting it to the character in the moment. She didn't say that before, and now when she says it this time, I'm like, oh. Or if she did, she didn't say it in a way, because we didn't record that, so we can't go back and look at it. I don't know how she said it, but it didn't click. So it could have been me that didn't follow the pentateuch. It could have been her that said it different, whatever. It doesn't matter. But this is why having a discussion about it, instead of just a, no, my way, you know, and then you're like, well, your way's wrong. Meh. Yeah. My way's right. Meh. And then you just go, that's not how you improve. That's not how you think about things better. So no, that's actually very, very brilliant, because I do have a bring it back line next. I mean, that's the thing, is we're also looking at things as islands. So the next line with this is another little piece of world building, but it's an instant in the moment world building, which is the next line reads, an air sprite fluttered past Latimus's view, its swirling tail leaving thin silk-like wisps in its wake. As was their way, the apparition was gone before he could focus on it. It broke him from his musings, returning his mind to the here and now. So I'm literally, and that's the other reason why I don't feel any of that is out of his head, because I'm literally telling you he was thinking about this stuff.
So yes, but I still feel like that paragraph is too disconnected. Like, but that's my opinion.
I now I do see a way to, it didn't bother me and it wouldn't have bothered. I mean, we're getting very, very, very
deep into the weeds.
Right. It's so funny because this reminds, and I think I've told this story on the podcast before, but when I was working with Larry Elmore back in 2015, he's the artist that did probably half the art for Dungeons and Dragons. He told me a story about his mentor, where his mentor had said, you know, he walked in, I don't remember what the mentor's name was, but he had walked in and Larry was basically erasing this ear he had drawn on this character. And it was like the third or fourth time he had erased the ear. And his mentor is like, what are you doing? He's like, I think I can do it better. And his mentor is like, and who's going to notice? Me? Five other artists in the world? Like, you're already at the top. Like, your ears are amazing. You don't have to keep digging. So some of this stuff becomes an exercise in futility, because it's like, no one else is going to notice but Marie and maybe a handful of other people. But the vast majority of readers, 99.9% of them, are not even going to notice that this. Yeah. They're not even going to notice that was an info dump. It's 66 words. Like, most info dumps are like three chapters long, and they start off with, in the days of old, the kings got together and, you know, made this proclamation. And like, that's an info dump.
You think I'm bad on info dumps? You should hear me. I read a single sentence that has like a had in it that refers to a week ago. I'm like, flashback, take it out.
Yeah.
Because I'm obsessive about flashbacks. So.
Well, and that's a great thing, because I have things I obsess about too. And this comes down to, and every writer has their foibles. And I think those are foibles. I have them and you have them. And what I mean by foibles is a fatal flaw, something that's actually bad for us. Because here's the other thing. Let's go back to just why are these 66 words here? They have nothing to do with the actual plot. But I have other jobs here than just the plot. And one of the jobs that I need to do, because I know the story can never do it on its own, as I have to just at least hint to the reader that this is actually a pretty big place, even though you're going to see a farm and then you're going to see 20 foot in any direction in a fog bank for the rest of the time that you're in here. And then at the end, you're in a room back in a place called Hawk's Landing, but you don't even get to see Hawk's Landing. You're literally in the room and you never leave that room. You kind of see out the window a little bit and see some trees, and that's it. So because I know this, why did I put this here? You are still a storyteller. You still have jobs to do. And sometimes those jobs are not going to follow all the rules. And so if you, like, sometimes a one-line flashback just
It needs to be there, even though it's a one-line flashback and it curdles your blood. It's just the way it is. And so we all have our foibles, and sometimes you just have to do what you have to do.
I agree. I do agree. Even I use flashbacks. I'm very cognizant of them in chapter one. I'm like, if you are giving me backstory in chapter one, you're doing it wrong. I'm just going to stop there.
Yeah, an entire podcast about that. Yeah. And then a second podcast where you busted me for doing it.
I do agree that, you know, and sometimes you do need to give that kind of like that little bit of an info dump. But an info dump is far less egregious if you can bring it back to the character 100%. In some way.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I mitigated it and I was happy with the mitigation. And I actually would have left it there until you actually gave me an idea that mitigates it even better.
Yeah.
And so who's going to notice that? Maybe no one.
Maybe no one.
Does it matter? No, it's better for me. Now I like it better.
Yeah.
So until we got to that point, I mean, that's the other thing. And I said this last night in my open Q&A. Never follow anyone's advice. Always make sure that their advice is what you want to do. So before the recording, she gave me a bunch of advice and I was like, yeah, I don't like any of that. At the beginning of this, where she was going, I didn't like. And then magic happened. And because I kept being open, I'm not going, oh, I'm not going to listen to Marie. She doesn't know what she's talking about. You know, I'm never going to listen to her. It's my. It's I hear you. I don't like it. I hear you. I don't like it. I hear you. I don't like it. Oh, wait, I hear you. And I actually really like that. Like, if you're not hearing and taking it in and making a decision on yes or no, if you've already answered no before the person opens their mouth to give you the critique, then why are you there? Why are you listening to this person? Just don't do the conversation. So even though I gave Marie a lot of no's, it was never a, no, I'm not listening to you. It was a, okay, no, I don't like that. I've thought about it. I've internalized it. It doesn't do what I want to do in my author voice. I get that it would work for you and yours. And so, no, I reject it. And I reject that. And I reject it until we finally got to the point where it was like, oh, magic. That's a yes. I really like that a lot. And I'm going to put that in there. And so it's in. And so when we're looking at critiquing, which is funny because I got to do a video on critiquing. So part of the writer's room, and writer's room is up live. So if you guys haven't heard about it, go to writersroom.us. It is a professional exclusive writing community that me and a guy from Hollywood started. It's amazing. And I'll go into more detail about it later. But, you know, why did I go down that path? Oh, I'm getting ready to do a video on, because we're going to have weekly critique groups, but you can't join a critique group until you've been certified in the Drake way of running a critique group, so that everybody knows that everybody knows the same rules, and everybody knows that everybody's going to follow the same rules, and that there's not going to be any funny business in any of our critique groups, because everyone's going to know Drake way to do it, and everybody's going to follow Drake's way to do it. And this is one of the important things. It's about being open to that critique, not following it, not necessarily saying yes to everything. It's like, oh, you should do it this way. Okay, yes, I'll do it that way. And you should do that. Oh, yes, I'll do it that way. Because you'll just ruin your manuscript. That'll just be 30 people writing your book.
Yeah.
And you'll have 30 different voices. So what we just saw there was me looking for advice that I could then put in my voice and fit my style, but fix the problem that Marie had with this section. And so if the critiquer is constantly going, hey, I'm trying to give you this is broken to me. Let me explain it this way. Oh, that doesn't work. Let me explain it a different way. Let's bounce some ideas or whatever. And the critiquer is going, okay, I'm hearing you. I'm thinking about it. I don't like that solution for what I want to do. So I'm going to reject it, but it has nothing to do with you. Remember, this is all, it's a business. It's a profession. It's not, there's nothing personal about whether I take her advice or not. It's subjective, so it can't be personal. And so, you know, the critiquer or the critique also needs to have that openness and go, okay, let me listen to you. Let me actually see what you're trying to say. And then with that kind of relationship, you can have some magic, and you should have that in every writer's group that you're in. So anyway, sorry.
So, yes. Let's beat up on me some more. Both of us will be running writers group circles. Yes. So there'll be some in the European time zone. For those of you who listen in the European time zone, it won't just be a USA time zone.
So also, you know, some of you are night owls or whatever. So, you know, during her day can be during your nights. Yep. If that's what you're available for. So yeah, once we get everything going, absolutely Marie is going to be a part of this, and I'm very, very excited about that. And we have some other people too that are, you know, because it's going to be pretty large. We're shooting to get upwards of 2,000 members, and so, you know, you need several good solid people helping to manage that and to run those things with that many people. But as I said all for the last 2 weeks at conventions, if you're serious about being a better writer, the writer's room will make you a better writer. And that's its whole job and goal. So writersroom.us. Anyway,
so the other thing. Then let's talk about filtering.
Was down on 351. Well, yep, I don't know
I've got it open. Yeah. So I'm going to read a little bit of the paragraph. So Latimus nodded past the old human toward his wife. Isn't it just you and the missus then? Master, the dragons never saw fit to bless us with offspring. It was then that Latimus noticed the wooden pendant hanging from around the man's neck, a depiction of the white dragon god Duin. Memories of his mother threatened to bubble up, but he pushed them away. Latimus continued to scrutinize the farmstead. Have you any slaked lime? Okay, so what I asked when I read this was, do you not see this as filtering? Because I would certainly call that filtering.
And it is.
To which Drake responded, yes, because he wants people to look at Latimus because he's trying to show that Latimus has only now spotted the religious iconography.
So let's make sure we're defining this for those people that aren't regulars or whatever. So the line is, it was then that Latimus noticed the wooden pendant hanging from around the man's neck. So that's the sentence. So if we diagram that, what is our subject? Latimus is our subject. What is our action? Noticed is our action. So that means the sentence is about Latimus noticing something. And so normally filtering is bad because I don't want to notice the character. I don't want to look at the character noticing something. I just want to see what they're noticing. And so it could easily be rewritten. A wooden pendant hung from around the man's neck, a depiction of the white dragon god Duin. Remember, I could easily do that. And that would cut the filtering. Filtering should only be done. Filtering has to do with camera direction. We want to constantly control where the reader is looking. So in this sentence, since it is filtered, the reader's looking at Latimus, who is looking at something. Why did I choose to do that? Well, I chose to do that because to me, that's where I want the reader's attention focused. I don't care about the dragon pendant. That's not what's important to me, and that's not really what I want the reader to notice. So I don't write the sentence, a dragon pendant hung around the man's neck. I write the sentence, Latimus notice a dragon pendant hanging around the man's neck, because I want the reader to look at Latimus looking at the pendant, because that's the important part to me. Now, she's right, and she wouldn't do it this way, and that's fine. You know, filtering is bad for the most part, and she's right. It would absolutely read probably exactly the same if I wrote it without the filtering. I don't think either way is stronger than the other. I don't think the filtering weakens this sentence. She does, and that's fine. You know, that's subjective. But to me, that reason is, and here's the reason why. And again, we also disagree on this, which is fine too, because there's other ways to do this. And she gave me some suggestions, and it's like, yeah, I could see writing it that way. But to me, that doesn't do exactly what I'm looking for. So, you know, right now she hasn't convinced me I could change, even though she literally just did. So here's my reasoning, just so everybody knows, and then I'll let you take another stab at me, and you will probably change my mind because I have a lot of faith in you. So the reason why it's important to me to have the reader look at Latimus noticing the pendant is the next line that follows it. Memories of his mother threatened to bubble up, but he pushed them away. Now, it's all subtext, but what I'm saying is, Latimus noticed a religious artifact. And him noticing this religious artifact reminded him of his mother. But he pushed those away. So obviously they weren't good memories. So subtext-wise, his mother was probably religious or a religious figure in his life. And subtext-wise, something probably really bad happened to her that he's not willing to deal with at this moment. All that's in subtext. Mm. But that's the reason why it's there. And then the next line is completely changing the subject because he's like, he looks around the farm. Do you have any slack line? And then for us medieval people, we know what that means, but I do explain it down. Slack lime is what you use to whitewash buildings back then to protect them from insects and everything else. So that gets in there, you know, because you can't just assume that people know this stuff because we don't slack lime anything anymore. So to me, the reason why I filter is because that's my way of saying, hey, look at Latimus looking at something. And then notice that because Latimus looked at it, some bad memories came up in his mind. And then notice that he ignored them all and completely changed the subject. That's why it's all in one paragraph. Even though you would go, well, wait a minute, wouldn't you want to pull the, when he says, have you any slack lime? Wouldn't you want to put that in its own paragraph? Because it's very different from the other paragraph. It is very different. And that's the point. It's very different because he's literally changing the subject in his own mind. He's like, I'm not going to think about this at all. And I'm going to ask you a completely different question than what this discussion that's going on, not between us, although the guy is talking about the dragon gods didn't see fit to bless them with children, but he's, you know, all of that. Now, again, am I being more clever than my own good? Maybe, because a lot of that is in subtext and it is where I want it to be, at least right now, until Marie convinces me differently.
Okay, so the first thing I'll say is that the filtering, to me, doesn't add anything to the subtext. Because you have the same effect without the filtering. You have the thing he notices and the immediate connection to the memories. If you wanted to make that connection more explicit, if you wanted to draw a slight emotion through it, you could have a brief heartache. You know, you could have the pendant hanging around his neck evoked a brief moment of heartache, and then memories of his mother threatened to come up, and then he suppresses them. So everything else remains the same. And the reason why I would do that is because for me, the action of noticing is not important to the connection with the memories. And I would like to emotionally connect that pendant to his mother's memories. That would be my take on it. So I just want to show a because when you first explained it to me, I misunderstood what you were explaining. I thought you wanted to do it this way to show that he wasn't religious.
Well, that's because I was trying to remember something that happened months ago. But once I pulled it up and read it, that's what reminded me. Oh, right. No. I did. Because when we were discussing this the first time, she had said that. And my mind went, you know what? I really could put some type of connection to it. Mm. Why didn't I do that? That's dumb. And then when I opened it up and read it, I was like, oh, wait, no, I did do it. I just didn't do it in a way that Marie's satisfied about, which is fine. But I did do it. And it wasn't that he wasn't religious. It was that his mother was religious, and therefore the noticing the religious symbol somehow, and I'm not going to tell you how, somehow it ties into his mother.
Yeah. So I would just tie a little, like I would just cut the filtering and just have that occur because it is the same thread. I don't think that the filtering makes it in any way stronger because the camera goes to the pendant, and then when the emotion comes, right, the camera swings back to Latimus, and we have the memory of his mother coming up and then being suppressed. So we have the motion coming back to him. Whereas the way you have it right now, the camera starts on Latimus. It goes to the pendant. It comes back to Latimus. So my preference would be that. So I just want to read from Hidden Blade where I introduce... now, it says Lance, but it's Louis because he's wearing a different face. So Lance goes into a monk's cubicle, and he's talking to a monk there. And Lance had interrupted the monk's labor. Most of the scroll still awaited the stroke of the brush. The dense black robe hung loose on the monk's lean frame, a silver corseal wrapped twice around his waist to keep it closed. The knots of the corseal made the lower half of the rope belt as thick as his thumb. Lance bowed with deep respect, ending on his knees, making the sign of the wheel on his chest. Despite the location of his temple, those knots proclaimed this monk to be a man of proven mystical talents. If a mystical talent could be proven, a dubious proposition to Lance's way of thinking. So what I did there was the same thing, like what my conception was of Latimus originally there is like, yes, the religion exists. He's part of it. He knows about it. He practices the religion, but he doesn't believe the religion at any depth.
Yeah, no, and it works perfect because that's also how he believes. So one of the big reasons why I'm not going to make this change in the Latimus side is because he's repressing all of this. So he doesn't allow himself to feel the heartache. And so if I added that to the character that I have Latimus being in my mind, because in his next section, so when the actual saga starts, so these are prequel pieces, they're standalone little pieces to introduce you to the character and the world. In the next one, he actually has to confront his mother, not her, because she is dead, but he has to confront that thing. And you find out that the reason why, because in this story, you find out that he was supposed to, by required by law, has to go into the army for 3 months. And he chose, instead of going to the army, to go into the Rangers, which no nobleman ever does. And you'll learn why as that goes on. But he was there for 9 months. And they actually had to come get him, because at the end of the story, that's what happens, is a soldier from his king's guard shows up and says, your dad says, you're coming home, like you're done. Because he actually said he's embarrassed, but he says it's time to stop playing with the forest elves and get home, because the king bade him, you must say exactly what I tell you to say. So that's another reason why. Again, that's why it's not rejecting, this is for the audience, not for you. It's not rejecting outright. You also have to filter it through everything you're trying to accomplish, not just with this moment in this story, but with the whole story as a whole and the character. And I want him to be incredibly repressive in this moment. I don't want him to feel the pain. I don't want him to feel anything. Yeah. So again, it just doesn't do that solution.
That's fine, but I still don't like the filtering. Like for me, that I know, and that's why I brought up the Lance example, because Lance it's just part of what he sees on the monk is there's the thing, and then there is the attached thought process. And for me, that sentence reads 100% the same if you focus on the pendant and then bring it back, right?
Well, so I don't think it does. I think I would have to. So one of the big differences between yours and mine is yours is a direct actual inner monologue dialogue. So I would need to, I feel like if I take out the filtering, then I would need to turn the memories of his mother threatened to bubble up to an actual some type of him thinking about it, which again, he doesn't want to think about it. He's refusing to think about it. So again, this is all subjective. There's no right answer to this. I still like my way that I have, and she still doesn't like my way. And there's nothing wrong with either one of those. Because again, we're having a 30-minute discussion on a line that no one else is even going to notice. Like, they're going to slip right by it.
Filtering is so common in published authors. So common.
But not in our stuff. That's why you're popping it, because you're like, wait a minute.
There's one filtering in this 25,000 word novella that you have. And there may be more, but I'm just saying, there's definitely this one.
Yeah.
So but, again,
it is very common. So I'm not saying like, you know, and that's why it's like, it's an esoteric discussion. Also because, you know, there is at a point, like at the beginning of our podcast and our relationship, when we were going through my writing, I would learn huge things in every session that Drake and I had. And now, like, I learn tiny nuggets from discussions like this, you know, where I internalize things, because it becomes obviously like, once you've, you know, generally mastered filtering, if you then start having these discussions about, yes, but I feel like this filtering adds and I don't, and like, you know.
You both grow through that discussion. Yeah. Because you see it from my point of view, I see it from your point of view. Maybe a change is made, maybe a change is not made. But that's why I said at the very beginning of this, it's going to look like mommy and daddy are fighting, but we are absolutely not. We're 100% trying to grow, not just ourselves, but or not just the other person in the argument, but also ourselves.
But why? So why do you feel that the camera going fweep, fweep, fweep is important? Why do you feel that that three-way flip adds anything?
So I don't know if it's that precise. It's, and again, everything we do as writers is, and again, it's not for you necessarily, but everything we do as writers, you have to feel like you're telling the story that you're in the way that you want to tell it. So this still flows for me. It makes me look at Latimus noticing the pennant, and then it makes me, and so my attention never, so you, in your mind, you're going from Latimus to the pendant to Latimus. That's not how my mind goes. I'm looking at Latimus looking at something, and then what he was looking at makes him have memories that he shoves down and ignores. So I never come off of Latimus. That's what the filtering does to me. Okay, to me, so the filtering makes you look at Latimus through the whole paragraph.
So I'll tell you why I look at that pendant. Because it's the introduction of the gods.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me becomes an important thing that I focus in on. So it goes Latimus pendant, then back to Latimus. So it gives me a kind of a whiplashy feeling.
Right.
Because it's the first time that I've, you know who the gods are. This is not your introduction to the gods, but it is mine as the reader.
I'm pretty sure that I've introduced the gods before then.
I will do a quick check.
That's what I was going to do. I might not have, but I mean, we've got Dragonkin, we got Dragonspine Mountains, Dragonkin. Nope.
And it's also like you go into some detail about the pendant. Like, it's a depiction of the white dragon god, Dwayne.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's why it drew my attention there, because this thing is my introduction to the actual religion, and it's my first mention of the gods. It's a named god, you know, so I zero in on it.
Right. And actually, I do introduce them beforehand, like two lines before them, because on the, and I master, the dragons never saw fit to bless us with offspring. Like, and because that statement is what draws, because he actually invokes the gods, and they're dragon gods in this series. That's what invokes, or that's what causes Latimus's eyes to go, wait a minute, is this guy actually, you know, showing his religion? And then I missed it, you know, oh yeah, there it is. So I don't know. Like I said, this is very subjective, but. And I hear everything Marie's saying, and I, you know, my mind is going, is there a way to change this that still makes me happy? But as of right now, the flow that I have when I read this is exactly what I want to see. And I hope, I mean, that's what you do as a writer. You hope that what you see is what they see. Because she's 100% right. Taking the filter out doesn't weaken this at all. But it also doesn't strengthen it. And that's another thing that I usually won't do. Even if somebody can convince me that their way is the same as my way, in my mind,
I usually will not do it because now that's just changing from the way that I naturally wanted to write it to a way that someone else naturally wants me to write it. And I'm not saying that's what she's doing, but like, I'm saying that's...
I get it, but I still feel that whiplash. And yeah. I hear you that you say, yes, you introduce it two lines before we say the dragons hasn't... But the dragons hasn't blessed us. Isn't the name, it's not the... Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's so much detail on this pendant that I have to look at it because it's an introduction to a world-building element. So my focus goes Latimus pendant back to Latimus.
Yeah, I can see that.
And that is why the flow to me is weird.
Right, right. And I can absolutely see that, which means that other people are going to experience that same thing. And you've given me a ton of different options. So far, I haven't landed upon one that does, that makes me happy.
So what makes you happy about the filtering?
Again, to me, I don't have the whiplash. So even though I can absolutely see that you have it and absolutely agree that other people are going to have it, I don't, even seeing it, I don't have it. To me, it was then that Latimus noticed the wooden pendant hanging around the man's neck, the depiction of the white dragon god Duan. Memories of his mother threatened to bubble up, but he pushed them away. To me, I never stopped focusing on Latimus. Yeah, I'm hearing about this pendant, but I don't take my focus off of Latimus. My focus is on Latimus from start to finish. So I don't have the whiplash. And now what I've been trying to think of is, can I...
How about if you move the pendant a little bit up, right? So when the dude's talking about the dragon, have him close his hand on the pendant. Or something like that, right? So that the attention's drawn to the pendant there. Because the problem is, because there's so much detail, and then you can have like Latimus, be like, I don't know, somehow think about or something like that. I don't know.
So changing to there is also an option, but to me, it's still... I would still want to do a filtering after that. If I move the so right now, the line
problem,
that Jarvis...
My problem isn't necessarily the filtering. My problem is that there's too much being introduced in the pendant with a god's name and everything else. And that means that I have to look at the pendant. So if you reduce the amount of detail post the filtering...
Now that's an idea.
Then I don't get the whiplash because I don't look. I'm looking at Latimus.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
That's an idea. So, because right now the line that the farmer says, his name's Jarvis. The name that he said, the line that he says is just talking head. So I don't have any narration with it. So I absolutely could have him say, the man wrapped his fingers around a pendant hanging from his neck, a depiction of the white dragon god Duan. As he said the words or whatever. I wouldn't want to write it like that, but whatever.
And then you can then you write, can yeah.
And I could write something like and I'm just gonna write this out of my mouth so it wouldn't be like this because I can't write on my mouth, but something like Latimus realized that he hadn't even noticed the pendant or whatever. And then
something
memory,
like that.
Then
that's fine because now I'm not looking Latimus pendant Latimus.
Right.
You see, I'm not doing
because
that.
To me, I don't care where I name the god because I do need to name it because the white dragon god is important to the connection to the mother. So I do need to name the white dragon god. I absolutely could move. I could move that up to that line and then still basically keep everything the way it is. And that's also, that works. That's actually a solution, but that doesn't change my filtering because I still want you to look at Latimus noticing.
100%. But it wasn't the filtering that bothered me. It's the whiplash.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, now I do like that because I don't care where I drop that information in. I just need to drop it in. So that's a really good solution. And again, everyone, that is why we stay open and you don't just dig your heels in and go, no, I'm going to do it my way. Because I'm looking for, I really do. I mean, every time somebody brings a critique to me, I'm always looking for, okay, maybe I don't have a problem with this, but because this person does, if you extrapolate that, that means other people are. And maybe it's only 5% or 10%, but I don't want any percent if it's something I can fix. So yeah, that actually, it fixes your problem by moving the detailed description of the pendant, and keeps what I'm trying to do in this paragraph, which is, hey, readers, look at Latimus looking at this thing, causing memories, and then look at him completely ignoring them and completely changing the subject all in the same paragraph. So it still keeps what I'm trying to accomplish with the paragraph intact, and it also eliminates the problem that Marie has. Because where I drop Duine's name, who cares? Like,
well,
that doesn't
you don't care, but so, and
well,
this
that's
comes
what I'm
to something. Yeah, this comes to something that I've also said to people in critiques is don't move between concepts without transition. And I'm like, obviously this is not as egregious, but I've read people where they're in combat and then all of a sudden they stop to give like an internal narration or a flashback or an explanation of a thing. And I'm like, are you insane? Like, I don't write that, but I think that.
Right.
What makes you think that a line of tension can survive you? Because you're giving the reader whiplash. You're like, I'm here, I'm doing this thing. Now I'm here doing this thing instead. I'm like, but I was.
Yeah. But this is also how you know you're growing, because in the beginning, you're right in the middle of a fight. And then you give this flashback to when they were 2 years old and having their butt wiped by mommy. And you're like, but technically you could say this is the same thing, but it's that thing that, again, no, most people are never going to, and when I say most, I'm literally 99.9% of all readers would never even, either one of these things that we talked about, neither one would even bat an eye to it. But that leads to, what do you want to be as a professional? Do you want to be a professional that goes, look, I'm good. 99% of the people are going to get this. I don't want to change it. I don't want to think about this. I don't want to work at this. I don't want to improve. Or are you insane like me and Marie and like, oh, wait a minute now, could I make it just that much better? Like, could it be a hair better? Let's go down that path. Let's figure out if we could make this a hair better. Because again, no one's gonna notice. But that's the level we're at. We can't, I can't pop her, she can't pop me for doing a flashback in the middle of a fight scene, because that is never gonna happen in our writings. So we gotta dig a little deeper to find something to, and not always. I mean, again, she did pop me on my first draft of Magic Falls of chapter one. I 100% did a flashback on the second page of the story and went back in time 15 minutes. Like, that's, I only went back in time 15 minutes. And it was only for like a paragraph or two, but she was like, why don't you just start there? Just start 15 minutes ago. I'm like, oh yeah, I should, shouldn't I? But again, it was such a small little flashback that I didn't even think about it. It was one little, maybe two lines in a paragraph. I don't remember, but it was just something that was just like, she'd been brushing his hair for a while or whatever.
I'm such a freak on flashbacks. Like, if I ever critique your stuff and you have a flashback in like the first chapter or two, you have to be prepared for the fact that I'm going to say, no, take it out. We do not need this now.
Or you start in the wrong spot.
Yeah. Or you start in the wrong spot. Like, one of those two things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I said, this is some pretty esoteric high level stuff, but it's all the same. It's just where you're at in your journey. The real magic to this, I'm hoping that you guys get out of this, is being a critiquer and being a critique is very, very important to understand your role, your relationship, and how, what you bring to the table and what you're trying to accomplish. The critiquer is trying to accomplish different ways of stating the same thing until the critiquer finally can see what, maybe a solution to the problem. And the critique is trying to see a solution to the problem. If every criticism that you get to, that comes your way, you approach with a, okay, I am wrong, so now let's see
if we can fix this in a way that makes me happy. It doesn't mean that you're going to fix it. I mean, it took us both quite a while to get both of these two things fixed. And literally, if we had not recorded this podcast, neither one of these changes would have gotten made. When we left our discussion before it, I was fine with the way it was, and she was fine with calling me an idiot. So we were both happy. Just saying, it worked out. But now it worked out better. Yeah. That is the role of the critiquer and the critiquee, and they do definitely have that. And it really is attitude. This is not your value as a human being does not come from how well you write, nor how well you tell stories. These are subjective widgets for consumption. That's it.
Yep.
Don't put your self-worth into what you do. Don't think that when somebody critiques you, they're ripping your soul up and they're, you know, peeing on your grave. Like, it's just some words on paper and they're trying to help. If somebody is loving enough to give you feedback, even if it's the word boring, that's a bad way to do it. But if they're caring enough to take time out of their life to give you the word boring, then you should honor that by going, okay, you're trying to help me. I mean, you know, obviously in that case, I think the critiquer is not doing their job properly, but they're still trying. And so with that, the critiquee should also try. It is a relationship. And so, you know, again, that's why all of this will be pounded into everyone in the writer's room's head, so that we do have very productive writers groups as opposed to toxic writers groups, which happens so often. So,
and I think that is a good point at which to end this episode. We have been offline for a couple of weeks, so welcome back, and I hope that you have all enjoyed this session.
Till next time.
Bye.